Well, good afternoon. Great to see you all. There's lots of friendly faces out there. And those of you I don't know already, my name's Michael, originally from Darlington in the Northeast, now living in exile down south in Wiltshire, and an elder in a church called Emmanuel Marlborough, quite a new church, in many ways just getting going, thinking about our mission involvement. Previously, I was one of the pastors at Beeston Free Church, a more established church, where we had the joy of sending quite a good number of workers into long-term cross-cultural ministry. And my day-to-day job is to help lead the mission organisation called UFM Worldwide that really helps churches like yourselves send and support their mission workers in cross-cultural mission. We're thinking today about the theme Mission Central, really thinking as local churches, how can we be quite intentional about who it is we're sending and supporting, what kind of partnerships we're going to have in church life, how might we want to focus our efforts in this area, or for some of us, how might we want to refocus and avoid the challenge of just too many things going on in too many places. As we get going, let me try and paint a picture of two different kinds of churches and see if you can identify any of these things in any of the places that you're serving in. Please, yeah, you're very welcome. Come on in. Here's church number one. Global mission interest is for the keen few, the ex-missionaries, the well-traveled, the prayer letter warriors. Maybe you've got some of those. We're grateful for them. They're the ones who are flying the flag for missions in our churches. They're the ones pinging you a million emails, bemoaning the fact that back in the day, the church is really into cross-cultural mission and no one's interested in it anymore. Why is that? A few smiles out there. And they're the ones saying, why can't we add yet another mission partner to that huge list of people that a lot of people in church don't really know who they are? Meanwhile, you've got the rest of the church family, and well, mission for them maybe is a once-a-year rendition of facing a task unfinished, and a slight caricature, and a vague awareness that in the back of the church hall somewhere there's a missions notice board, and someone's printed out the letters M-I-S-S-I-O-N, and it's all nice, and there's a few bits of string pointing to people in parts of the world people hope they will never have to go to in your church, and they're people really a lot of people just don't know anymore. Perhaps all is not lost, though, in this church, because three of the young people are just back from a two-week mission trip where they were building a church building in South Asia. Although, if you're honest, you're not sure if those same young people have got any friends from that ethnic group in the school down the road that they go to. A bit extreme caricature, but you get the idea. Maybe there's some little seeds of truth in some of the things I've just shared in church number one. What about church number two? Well, in a part of town where this church is, the demographics have changed massively over the last 25 years. And the church is really acutely aware of this, and they want to respond to the changing reality around them. And so tonight at the prayer meeting, they've invited an Indian pastor that you partner with to speak about the culture of the people group that is the majority of the population around your church today. How might you engage with that people group? What's important to that people group? You just had the joy of sending a family into long-term mission service in the Republic of Ireland. You've seen the Lord work in their heart over many years. You've seen them just be humbled by the fact that here's a country close to home where there's 120 towns with 5,000 people or more with no evangelical church. And you've been really thrilled to see people in your church family realize the responsibility of sending intentionally as they prepare to go. It's been a great partnership. And then to cap things off, three students have just returned from a short-term mission trip. They went to visit long-term mission partners you support in Myanmar, serving among an unreached people. And as they witnessed something of what God is doing, as they observed what was happening there, and as they saw their Myanmarese brothers and sisters serving the Lord in a challenging context, they've come back with their hearts just burning for a heart to serve those from different cultures in the place where they are right now. Two churches, two really quite different pictures. And of course, they're kind of extreme examples, of course. But we'll see a bit of both of those, I'm sure, in the churches we're involved in. Some great highlights that really encourage our hearts, and some things that kind of trouble us and concern us. And the question we want to begin to get to today, myself and Ant, is how do we get from church number one to church number two in our situations? How do we go from complexity and niggles and hobby horses and disengagement to sensitivity when it comes to our mission involvement? How do we get to cultural relevance, to our whole church families being involved in this as a part of the normal pattern of church life? How do we go about unpicking parts of our mission involvement that really, really were good 20, 30, 40 years ago, but now just feel a little awkward or maybe irrelevant if we're really honest. How do we go from being complicated to a bit more straightforward? And much more positively, how do we set our stall out as churches to have a healthy engagement with cross-cultural mission where the whole church is involved? Well, here's my short answer to that question. I'll share a bit now, then my friend Ant, who serves at Radstock, he'll introduce himself in a moment, is going to be sharing in this seminar as well. Here's my short summary. How do we go from church number one to church number two? Two things: make it normal and keep it simple. Make it normal, keep it simple. Maybe you're thinking, I want a refund for this because that's not too profound. I hope the mission guys give us something a bit more technical to go home with. But say this hopefully because this is the reality we need to pursue if our whole church is going to be involved in our mission life. Let's start with the second of those things. Keep it simple. I think we all feel in church life, don't we, in ministry, whatever ministry we're involved in, the pressure to come up with the next big thing. If you're on social media at all, you see people are vying to tell you all what the next big thing in ministry is they're about to launch. And it's a bit exhausting at times, isn't it? We've got to avoid that particular temptation in ministry broadly, I'd argue, and particularly also when it comes to our involvement in World Mission. Let's remind ourselves that the big thing in World Mission, as we've been hearing in the last two main sessions, the big thing, it's already happened. Dan Strange was sharing this morning in the book review, the Lord is at work fulfilling his promises that the gospel will be preached in his name to all nations. That is liberating for us, isn't it? We don't need to create something spectacular to have something to show for ourselves. Luke 24 that Julian referred to yesterday in his sermon, we see that Jesus is at work right now on earth from heaven by his Spirit, fulfilling everything promised in Scripture. He said he must fulfill the following things in Luke 24. He must suffer, he must be raised back to life, and the gospel must be preached in his name to all nations, which means it is as certain the gospel will be preached to all nations as it is certain that Jesus died and rose again. Again, that's liberating for us, isn't it? Let's keep it simple. As the Father has sent the Son, so Jesus sends us, the church, into this world. And as sent people, we have the joy, the privilege of participating in this work that Jesus is doing among the nations. We haven't got to dream up something new. God's already at work doing this. His plan is big enough already. So there's the first thing. As we think about our involvement in mission, let's keep it simple. The big thing's already happening. With the people God has given to you in your particular church, with their particular gifts, how can we be involved in God's purposes for the nations? Not worrying what the church down the road is doing or what your church did 40 years ago, but right now, with the people God's given to you, with the gifts he's given and the desires he's laid on their hearts, how can you be involved? So keep it simple. Then the other thing we said, make it normal. I guess if you did a straw poll of people in your church and you said to them, is our mission involvement in church life something you would describe as being a normality or something as being a niche pursuit, where would you sit on that spectrum? I guess for many of us, it would be somewhere towards the niche end rather than the normal end. Acts 1 verse 8 again, which we had preached, I won't re-preach it now, we had preached yesterday, so helpful in this regard, okay? Thinking about just the normality of cross-cultural mission. And there in Acts 1 verse 8, we have mission to Jerusalem, to Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Sometimes we'll interpret and apply that passage like this. We've got mission to Jerusalem. For us today, that's local mission, and we're all involved. We've got mission to Judea and Samaria. Maybe that's mission slightly at arm's length, national mission. That's for some. And then we've got category 3, mission to the ends of the earth. Oh, this must be world mission today. And that's for the select few, the mission keynotes we talked about at the beginning with all their prayer letters or those who go overseas. And as we move from local mission to national mission to cross-cultural global mission, we go from normal to very niche, which is wrong. It's just biblically wrong, isn't it? Because as you read Acts 1:8 in its context, we see the gospel going from Jerusalem to Judea and Samaria. Even in the book of Acts, we see the gospel beginning to go to the ends of the earth. Where are we today? We're at the ends of the earth. It's going to make a joke about people from Hartlepool at this point, but you know that. But I'm from Darlington, I can say that. They'll be saying the same about me. But you sometimes feel like you're at the ends of the earth, but we're all at the ends of the earth. What does that mean? If you're serving the Lord in Kidderminster or Cara, whatever it is, It's exactly the same work we're doing. Again, Dan talked about that in his book review this morning. We can normalize the whole idea of cross-cultural mission. The geography is totally secondary. It's who we're speaking of that's of primary importance. One of the things we've got to do in church life, and I'll finish this before I hand on to Ant now, is to just try and communicate to people in church family life that a keen interest, an active interest in cross-cultural mission is just plain normal. It's just normal. It's not a specialist subject. Really struck by this when we were at Beeston Free in Nottingham about 20 years ago, just under, we were preparing to send a family to Greece. And we'd not sent a family for about 20 years at that point. So it felt like a really big occasion. The commissioning service came along. We're all there, very excited, mixed feelings in our hearts, saying goodbye to our dear friends. And the pastor at the time, a guy called Andy Gemmell, some of you might know him, he said something so striking at the commissioning service. He said, the danger of a day like today is we think, wow, this is so unusual. And we make it very special. And he said, you know, what this family are going to do in Greece is a very normal thing for any Christian family to consider doing, biblically speaking. And what we're doing as a church in sending them to a different part of the world with the gospel of Jesus, that biblically speaking is a very normal thing for a church to be involved doing. So as you think about our involvement in mission as churches, let's keep it simple and let's make it normal. I'm going to hand on to Ant now. It's going to help us think a bit about mission partnerships in church life.
Thanks. Yes, thank you, Michael. My name's Anthony, and I work internationally with Radstock Ministries, connecting up churches in different parts of the world to work together. And I work serve locally in Derby, where I live with my family, with a community called Urban Life, where we live and serve in the multicultural inner city, a place where there's many nationalities and faiths. And I'm part of the Woodlands Church as well, where I worked for many years. It's great to be here and with all of you. And one of the things I think that is wonderful, isn't it, is to be with people from so many different churches from not only across the country, but also across the world. And that, of course, is exactly what Jesus anticipated. It always strikes me that Matthew 28, when you have the risen Jesus talking to his disciples, he foresaw communities being planted, church communities planted all over the world, so that as he gathered with his disciples and he declared that all authority everywhere was now given to him, what he was doing was he was giving them the confidence to go out and to gather people together, to baptize them and to disciple them, to teach them everything that he taught them, and to basically start churches. I mean, he called it making disciples, which is interesting in and of itself. But that's what it was, wasn't it? To go and gather people together and baptize them as the mark of belonging and teaching them everything that he had told them, and to do that again and again and again and again to the ends of the earth until the communities of light are shining to every people group in every place. And so forming church partnerships and seeking to start new churches is one of the most significant ways that churches can engage with mission in circles wider than their own locality. And I want to suggest that to do this as one of the strands of how a church gets involved with global mission really does go with the grain of the New Testament generally and with Jesus' vision specifically. It reaches the peoples to the ends of the earth. More than that, it actually goes further. Church communities show the wisdom of God, according to Ephesians 3:10, the manifold wisdom of God in the heavenly places, which is an astonishing thing to think about, it, isn't it? To the rulers and authorities, the spiritual powers, both angelic, and I take it particularly the malevolent demonic forces who are set on wreaking havoc in the earth and causing trouble and sowing evil wherever they can. But what it seems to be saying here is what stops them in their tracks is when they see church communities. And they see these people living counterculturally, living in a different way and loving God, loving their neighbor, loving one another. And in that moment, a better and unstoppable narrative is being communicated that is unavoidable and it glorifies God. The church ultimately is God's mission strategy. Hence titles like this conference, Church Without Borders. And as Michael pointed out, the fact that we're even here today is a demonstration of how far it's gone. But there's still further to go, isn't there? Because depending on how you count them, there's 4,000 and something people groups still to reach, and increasingly in areas that are difficult. I think of my friend, we call him Arthur, in part of Asia where he's reaching out to a people group that have not ever had, as far as we can tell, an indigenous church in that area, in that place. And he serves there. He's from a neighboring country. He is regularly threatened. He's been beaten many times. They've tried to throw him off a cliff. They've tried to run him off the road. And he is determined. He's full of joy despite all of that. He is determined to keep on going and has managed just recently. They have registered the first church, as far as anyone knows, in that area ever, because Jesus is still building his church in these places. So if we think about developing fruitful church partnerships across cultures, what might it look like to develop partnerships with churches in other places, such as Arthur's church or other places? I want to say we're not just thinking about pen pal type relationships or church twinning. You know, that might be very nice, but we want something with a bit more bite than that, don't we? We want to be engaged and effective. Some of you locally in your own regions may have been involved with activities where people have become aware of a part of your city or your region where there is no church, or maybe there is a church, but it's struggling and you really want to see more of a gospel witness. And there have been situations many times that I've heard of seeing churches work together with other churches to pool resources and energy and people and finance and training to make something new happen and see something established. And that's a wonderful thing. It's great to realize we can do that globally too. That's part of what church can involve. Now, doing it globally is more complicated and slower than working together in your own city, but it's worth it. One of the things it does, it's a wonderful representation of the glorious nature of the international body of Christ and the unity there. It's a wonderful thing. Christchurch Redbourne, which is a church that some of their leaders are here this week, has been working alongside for a few years now, our own church in Derby, and also a church in Albania, and all working together to try and establish and support what is still a very tender and vulnerable church plant in a city with no other gospel witness, none, amongst the least reached people group in Europe. And that's been a real blessing and privilege to be part of that. Another church that's represented here, Egbeth Community Church in Liverpool, has been long established in trying to support in varying ways, sending people, resourcing in other ways, to establish a church in a part of Kosovo and to see that bedded in. And I would suggest they are really worthwhile partnerships. But how does a church go about this kind of thing? Well, here's three quick things to consider. Be humble. Be intentional and be long-term. First of all, be humble. One of the books we're recommending is this one from Tim Chester called Mission Matters. And in it, I hadn't noticed this until a couple of weeks ago, I was reminded that there's actually a bit in here where he was traveling in the Balkans with my predecessor, Brian Jose. And Brian was pointing out how often it was as they were traveling around these different places that people from the West would show up, sometimes uninvited, full of their own ideas and start telling people in that locality how they should be reaching their locals and telling them what to do. And Brian would delight in pointing out, if you had a visitor from this part of the world show up in your church uninvited and start telling you how to reach Brits, how would you give them the platform? The answer is probably not. When we go into another culture, we need to realize and remember that as we develop partnerships, we need to show respect and be humble. We need to spend a long time sitting and listening, not least because in many cultures around the world, they are far more relational than in Western societies. You don't just rock up for half a day with an agenda of three things you want to talk about and think that you've communicated anything. Well, you've probably communicated something negative, actually. We want to sit and take time and listen. Vision trips are important in building these sorts of things, asking people about their family, about their history, find out about dreams and hopes and plans. We want to respect any local leaders that are already there. Of course, if we're planting something new, it's a different thing. But where there are leaders already and we're partnering with churches that are there, we're the learners. We're a child in cultural terms in that situation. And we want to respect the local leadership. They're the experts. As one former member of our team who used to work in Russia said, when you come back for the third time, then they know you're serious. Because many have come and made promises and left and never come back. Our own church has had a partnership for 20 years now in one location. It's 20 years since we first took a team out there, my wife and I, to try and suss out what might be possible. And different workers have come and gone, and teams have come and gone. And part of what has made that work is that we have always tried to respect humbly the local leadership, so that when we send short-term teams, which is a wonderful thing for churches to do, we have tried to do that and be shaped by what the church there wants and needs. We don't want to make their lives more difficult. We want to encourage what they do. The believers who are there are actually the long-term mission team, aren't they, when you think about it? And so we, as a short-term mission team, want to build into what they are doing longer term. And that, by the way, is the beauty of partnering with the locals, whether with cross-cultural workers or Indigenous believers. When you partner with the locals on the ground and fit into their vision, it actually amplifies something of what your short-term team can do. Because it's not just hit and run, it feeds into a bigger vision and increases the impact. So be humble, be intentional. We've implied this already, but just briefly, we, after listening to the locals and we understand what the need is, to the extent that we're able and gifted to be able to do it, we want to plug into that, whether it's, it might be financial, it might be training, there might be a desire for street evangelism, camps, building projects, it could be many things. The need even might be just simply to visit and encourage. We can undervalue that sometimes. Sometimes where you're in situations where the work is small and hard, to sit and pray with people who spend much of the time feeling isolated can be hugely significant, hugely significant. You know, one of the churches that we connect with has said to one of their supporting churches, please don't send us a big team. It's so exhausting for us as a small community to host you all. It's sometimes seen as a little bit weird locally in the context. Just send two or three people to sit and pray and encourage us and hear us and let us introduce you to one or two of our friends. Whatever form it takes, be intentional. And then the third thing, be long term, which we can't say is a rule, but I recommend it to you as something to seriously think about, because there is something wonderful about a local church taking an interest in a place, in a city, or a particular people group, and getting stuck in over the long haul and going deep with that particular situation. Some of our friends in the Balkans talk in their localities about needing a 100-year vision to think about what it's going to look like for the gospel to be established in that place. And, you know, being long-term gives you the luxury, too, of being able to start small and seeing things grow. You develop in your understanding and your levels of mutual trust and your capacity. Sometimes with these kind of partnerships, you can have a real issue with trust, can't you? How do we know that money's being used how it should be, or that people are doing the right thing? But over time, when you work together and trust grows, you can do more. As I mentioned, the 20 years or so that our own church has been partnering. You see fruit over the long haul. Leaders grow and trained. Maybe you are part of whatever is the next step of their vision as they see another church. And it helps your church get it too, because they feel after a bit, we got to know these guys. We know them. Maybe many of your people will have been. You've received them and so on. Now, of course, one of the key expressions that partnership might involve is sending people to go and serve long term. And so over back to Michael for that.
Thanks, Anthony. I omitted to tell you where we're going in the seminar at the beginning. Apologies. So if you're clever, you'll have got this already. We lay out at the beginning that this is the reality. We're sometimes in our churches struggling with the complexity. How do we engage in mission? Anthony then very helpfully talking about one expression of focusing in on particular church-to-church partnerships, different parts of the world. I'm now going to speak, as Anthony said, about a bit about the ministry of sending individuals, families, into cross-cultural work. And then Anthony will pop back up in a moment and help us begin to think about how do we talk about these issues in church life? How do we get to a plan, really, get to clarity about what we're going to be involved in? And then we'll leave plenty of time, we hope, for questions at the end. So let's think a bit about sending people. The New Testament, of course, has lots of examples of churches sending people. Acts 13 being the classic example, the church in Antioch. Romans 15, we read about the sending church for Paul, wanting to be supported as he goes to Spain. So some of our churches will be involved in sending those who are from our church, a really beautiful ministry, which we're going to come back to. Another of our churches will be involved in supporting people who've been sent from elsewhere. And I think we mustn't play off one against the other. Sometimes when you think, well, if we're sending from our church, that's like the Premier Division. And if we're just supporting people, well, it's better than not being involved in mission, but it's not quite as good, really. And it's not how the Bible speaks, is it? Especially the book of 3 John is a beautiful book about a ministry of sending and supporting. If you're familiar with the letter, John writes to the elder Gaius in this particular church. Gaius has done a great job of welcoming in some traveling evangelists or missionaries. John commends them because he says they were strangers to you, 3 John verse 5. Again, and then John's writing to Gaius to say, look, in the same beautiful way you've received these people, I urge you now to send them on their way in a manner worthy of the Lord, a manner that honors God. So again, there's no kind of like second division for a ministry of supporting those sent from elsewhere. It's commended really clearly in 3 John. I'm going to linger over 3 John just as a structure for the thoughts we're going to share about sending and supporting people from our churches. First thing to say is that it's a great privilege, isn't it? Listen to this from 3 John and verse 8. It says, we ought therefore to show hospitality to such people, speaking about these missionaries who are going to be sent on again. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such people that we may work together for the truth. That we may work together for the truth. This phrase is so important for us to get hold of when we think about ascending and supporting ministry from our churches. We are fellow workers as we send with those who have gone. Those who send, those who go, workers together for the truth. It's a great concept. So, for example, in a UFM context, there's the guys at Three Bridges Free Church in Crawley send and support the Bakira family in church planting ministry in Uganda, as they at the moment seeing, praise the Lord, literally scores of people coming to faith and being baptized. So the guys in Crawley and the guys in Uganda, they're workers together for the truth. That's what 3 John 8 says. Or as the church family in Highfields, they're in Cardiff, Dave was sharing earlier, the pastor there on the stage, as they prepare to send a young family to a difficult country in Southeast Asia, where it's illegal officially to convert from the majority of religion to Christianity, a place where the soil's going to feel pretty hard. So the guys at Highfields and the family they're sending and the national partners they'll work with, so they're workers together for the truth. Or the guys at Wheelock Heath go on supporting the Gilmores like decades after they were first sent to Italy, as they see signs of life in a newish church plant there in Sicily. They're workers together for the truth. Same in your church. We're not just observers or funders or supporters or people interested in our relationship with those we send. We're workers together, we're partners. It's a really beautiful, beautiful privilege for us. The work in the place out there somewhere is very much a part of the work in the place you're in yourselves. So as you send and support, as your exposure to God's work grows, then your delight in what you see God doing around the world also can grow in the local context. Those times when we perhaps feel the soil being particularly hard, maybe in the place we're in, and maybe we've got all of our struggles, having an opportunity to have our eyes raised beyond the four walls of our own context is such a precious gift from the Lord. And if you're already involved in this ministry of sending and supporting, and you've been doing it for many years in your church with others, just be encouraged. Keep going. Keep going. It's a really great privilege, isn't it, to see what the Lord is doing in different parts of the world. Often when it comes to mission, we talk a lot about those who are going. No one goes without the sending, as we heard so helpfully with the example yesterday evening in the sermon. Work us together for the truth. Second thing to say about a ministry of sending is sending and supporting workers comes with great responsibilities. Listen to this from 3 John verse 6. I mentioned it earlier on. Speaking about the way in which we're to send and support, John says to Gaius, please send them on their way in a manner that honors God. The old NIV puts it in a manner worthy of the Lord. We see where the bar is set when it comes to a ministry of sending and supporting. It's not down here somewhere. It's not the kind of classic caricature of, well, we've got the line in the mission budget for the money and we'll pray every quarter at the special missionary prayer meeting. That's the ministry of sending sorted out then. Quite the opposite. David Jackman writes about this verse. He says, there could not be a higher standard of generosity to emulate sending in a manner worthy of the Lord but then there could not be a higher or more worthy service than theirs. If we're going to send in a manner that honours God, a manner worthy of the Lord, what's that going to look like? Well, surely it's going to be characterised by a sending that is selfless and sacrificial and generous and lavish. As you read the New Testament, you see something of the breadth and the depth of what a ministry of sending can look like. Again, it goes way beyond just chipping in a bit of money and praying from time to time. Here are some of the things the New Testament talks about. You see churches discerning and recognizing calling in those who are about to send. You see people being set apart and then sent by those churches into their mission service. You read about hospitality and finance being given. You read about warm welcomes and generous sendings. There's talk about prayer and concern and a space to rest. There's help with all the practicalities, food and transport and logistics, provision of co-workers. The example in Romans 15, again, I think was alluded to yesterday evening, speaks about Paul wanting just to be with them in that church for a while so he can be refreshed by them. For ourselves, we've known personally the joy of being on the receiving end of this kind of ministry. We served for a short time in Indonesia as a family, and we received all kinds of love and practical service from our church in Nottingham, which we're forever grateful for. As we prepared to go to Southeast Asia, so people invested in us for many years and trained us. As we were set apart by our church to be sent, people supported us financially. I mean, tens of thousands after tens of thousands provided by those we knew and some we hardly knew at all. At times we felt distant. Some supporters flew thousands of miles just to come and sit with us and be with us. It was so precious to us. When we rejoiced that gospel progressed, people could join us in that rejoicing. When we shared the heartaches of life overseas, people would share in our sufferings. When we came back on home assignments, people prepared toys for our kids and debriefs for our family. When we faced the possible medevac, people mobilized for prayer. When we had practical needs, whatever they were, homes or holidays, vehicles, vaccines, every single one of them was met. When we came back much earlier than planned to the UK, pretty disorientated because of the circumstances in which we returned, disappointed, our church welcomed us home. They gave us time and space to find our feet. They welcomed us back through our tears. They listened to us patiently. And they sent us in a manner that honours the Lord. Praise God for that. Again, if you're involved in that ministry, never underestimate the impact of what you do in the lives of those you send. It's so precious. We're called, aren't we, to send in a manner worthy of the Lord, a manner that honours the Lord. I wonder, as we reflect on our sending ministry in our churches, in what way is that happening already? How can we rejoice about that? And in what ways do we want to take it to the next level and learn from some of the things we've been talking about just now? Last thing to say about a ministry of sending is this. I'll come to the kebab in a moment. Not quite lunchtime yet. Friends, I want to say that in our churches, we have every reason to be on the front foot when it comes to prayerfully identifying people for cross-cultural mission service. Between 2000 and 2020, a net 5 million people have come into the UK. A net 5 million people have come into the UK. And we praise God for the cross-cultural mission opportunity that presents. Acts 17, God has appointed people's times and places. It's not by accident this has happened. We praise God for Christian brothers and sisters who are coming into the UK to help us in the missionary task right here in the UK. And we praise God for the cross-cultural missionary opportunity in the UK. Let's take it. Praise the Lord, a net 5 million people, many from parts of the world with less access to the gospel. At the same time, friends, if you look at population growth stats for the same period of time in the UK and compare them to population growth stats in other parts of the world, you'll find there are 1.5 billion more people not in the UK than there were 20 years ago. Let me share that again. There are 1.5 billion more people not in the UK than there were 20 years ago, because the population in other parts of the world continues to grow very rapidly indeed. The reality is the harvest is still plentiful and the workers are still few, to paraphrase the famous verse. So, I mean, how do we respond to this reality in our churches then? I think if we're honest, the one word answer is passively. We respond passively. What do I mean by that? I mean that as church leaders, that this was exactly our situation in Nottingham, in that situation I mentioned about 20 years ago. We'd not sent anyone for 20 years. We weren't tapping anybody on the shoulder. And yet a couple came to us with a heart to go to Greece. And we were delighted at that point. But that really was the first point we'd come into that conversation. And that's probably the case, I think, in most of our churches. If people come to us with a heart move for mission, we're thrilled. And at that point, we'll do all we can to help. I want to suggest we should be moving away from that more passive approach, and we should be getting on the front foot to more prayerfully be identifying intentionally people with the gifting and character of a cross-cultural service that we might send them from our churches. Why do I say that? Well, Matthew 9:38, we've mentioned already famously, doesn't it? Famously asks us to, well, we're commanded to pray that God would send out workers into his harvest field. There's an intentionality there, isn't there? We're to be prayerful in our churches. We're to have this longing that, God, would you raise up and send out workers for the billions of people with little or no access to the gospel? One practical way we're trying to do this in our early years at Emmanuel Church in Marlborough, a newer church plant context, is we're trying to set our stall out as church leaders, as elders, to say this to the people in the wider congregation, to our church members. We would love to be a sending church. Can we pray that in God's timing, if it's his will, from this church, we'll be sending people to the least and the lost? And what we've done, we've got a few mission connections in church life because I'm involved in EFM. We've got an EMF board member. Our pastor is Reuben, who grew up on the mission field, etc. We're not short of mission connections. We could have 50 mission partners tomorrow and pray for them and give more like £50 each a year or something and feel good about ourselves. We're trying not to go down that road intentionally. We support two families that are sent elsewhere. And we're praying that God would raise people up from within our church. And while we wait perhaps for the answer to be prayed, we're saving some of our mission budget each year and allocating it in a little pot in our accounts that we know as a church is there for when God, we hope, answers that prayer. There's money there that can be used for a vision trip for an individual or a family. There's money there that could be used for mission training. There's money there that could be used perhaps in time to have setup costs for that person. So we're off to a good start. So let's be on the front foot in praying for workers, but more than just praying for workers, let's be on the front foot in identifying people in our congregation. 1 Corinthians 12 is that the great image of the church as a body made of many parts. We see it's within the body that gifts are recognized and honored and put to use. Who's best placed to understand the gifts of people in your congregation for possible mission service? Is it a mission agency representative like myself, meeting at a service station coffee shop for half an hour, pulling out my mission agency leaflets and telling you, here's three good teams you could go on next summer? I'm not trying to do myself out of a job, and I'm certainly not trying to speak against mission agencies. It's clear there's a place for them, because I'm in one. What I'm trying to say is you guys know the people in your church the best. Ephesians 4, you've been given as leaders to equip God's people for works of service. You put all of that together, where is gifting for mission or any other ministry, where is it best recognized and encouraged and developed? Answer, in the local church, alongside local church leaders. So we take it a step further practically. When they go for a kebab, or whatever fast food is culturally appropriate for your particular context. I'm happy with most fast foods. I can understand most of those. When they go for a kebab on a Friday night, who in your church is the person that actually talks to the guy behind the counter while they're waiting for their order to get fulfilled rather than just scrolling through their phone? Who's the person when the international student walks quietly in the back of church sitting all on their own? You've not got to go to that person in the church family and say, oh, there's a lady at the back. Would you just mind going to speak to them? They've been there for the last 10 minutes because they clocked them ages ago and they're already inviting them around for lunch. When the refugee crisis erupts on our TV screens, who's at the prayer meeting that night with like tears in their eyes? Whose hearts move for people from a different place and a different culture? Friends, as church leaders, they're the sort of people we need to be thinking about and looking for in answer to the prayers that we're praying that God would send workers into cross-cultural mission. I'm not trying to manipulate people or make people feel guilty, but recognizing what the Lord is doing in their hearts and then taking some initiative and going to them and gently trying to encourage them in those gifts that you already recognized. Saying to them, look, I think the Lord's really given you a lovely gift with people from different cultures, different ethnicities. Have you noticed that yourself? Could we work with you to explore that a bit more? Would you think about getting involved in this ministry in the city we're in or the town we're in? Would you be open to maybe being sent out by the church on a short-term mission to these mission partners we know, just as a way to discern what God might be doing in your life, rather than being on the back foot just waiting for this magically to happen? Close with this and hand back to Anthony. I think of a young lad called John. He came to faith in his late teens at the youth group back in Beeston on a weekend away. He'd grown up in the church. That same summer, a few months later, we took on a beach mission for reaching out to international students in Bournemouth. He was only 18, about to go to uni, and I was helping to lead the team. And I turned around at one point, late at night on the beach, and this guy, John, he's surrounded by this big group of Arab lads from the Middle East. Just had this natural ability to speak to people from different cultures, even at his young age. As the years went on then, we encouraged him to do more weeks like that. Then we sent him on a short-term mission to Thailand, where we knew some mission partners, as well as some other places. In God's goodness, he's now serving in Italy with his family in long-term cross-cultural ministry sent by the church there in Nottingham. And for me, it's been one of the biggest joys of my Christian experience, just to see what God has done. Again, what a privilege to be involved in sending and supporting people from our churches. Let's pray that God would be raising people up that we have the joy of sending. I'm going to hand back to Anthony. Thank you.
So as we just try and pull things together a little bit, and then in a moment we'll have time for questions, I want to think for a moment about how we might think about developing a mission strategy in our church. And, you know, if we believe in line with Ephesians 2:10 that God has good works planned in advance for us to do, that must surely include our church's involvement in fulfilling his great commission, mustn't it? And it's an important part of a church's vision, isn't it? And something that leaders should own, by the way. Michael's already mentioned this, but that is really powerful in a church in helping to normalize it. When the main leaders stand up and own it, it takes it out of the category of a special interest for a group of eccentrics over here and into the mainstream of the church of this is what we do. This is part of who we are. But how might we develop a strategy? And this is just a bit of a starter because obviously it becomes quite specific quite quickly. We've got some stuff over there. We've developed a little kind of mission MOT that Michael may talk about in a minute that you might want to look at, mission audit. There's a follow-up webinar if you're interested in that you could sign up for where we could talk again and maybe be a bit more personal or just one-to-one chats with us. But let me say, coming up with a mission strategy is really worth spending some time on. It's a little bit like a filter. That can be driven perhaps by categories or by geography, or maybe some combination of both. One church in our network down in Luton chose to focus on three main priorities as they prayed and talked about it. And they said, well, okay, we want to emphasize serving the poor, starting churches among unreached peoples, and developing missional church leaders. And they decided that they would particularly prioritize opportunities where there was an opportunity for two of those things to come into play at the same time. Others perhaps have a blend of something like that with a kind of geographical filter. So the Orchard Church in Chicago, a big mega church that we're involved with in different ways, their global missions director, because they have one of those, has a map on his wall with a kind of rough squiggle drawn around a part of the world. That started around where some of their initial interests were already gathered. And then over time, it's kind of moved a little bit further south and east. It's kind of like a 1040 window on a jaunty angle. And that is the part of the world that they believe God would have them focus on and with a particular emphasis on evangelism, church planting, and leadership development. But together, that's their filter for involvement. That's their go-to. Could say perhaps more on how they got there. We could talk about it maybe in the webinar, if it's helpful to hear what others have done. But for you, how would you go about developing some kind of vision like this? Well, sometimes, as Michael's implied in talking about how we look for workers, part of our strategy might sometimes be looking at our existing local vision and extrapolating out from that. So is your church strong or experienced in some particular area like leadership training or relief for the poor, working with homelessness, student work maybe? you might connect with partnerships that would bring that to the fore, and that you could really serve in that way if you already have gifts and experience in your church in that way. It might be that you have started new churches, or that you are a new church yourself, so there's a sense of affinity with others in that same situation, even if the cultural context might be different. It might be that there's a local people group that is already on your radar locally, and you think, well, maybe we could work alongside people who are working in the country where they've come from and try and work something together there. Various kinds of ways to develop some kind of filter or strategic range. And a key thing that many churches find helpful in driving this sort of thing is to have a team lead this in the church, isn't it? To develop some kind of mission team. Now, of course, there's no biblical requirement to have such a thing. Sometimes churches prefer to keep it within the eldership. Although, let me say, if you do that, please make sure that it does get some airtime and doesn't get pushed out with everything else that you've got to think about. But it can be helpful to have a team. And most significant, as with any team, is it's important to get the right people on the team. You don't just want to make it, and understand me rightly here, you don't just want to make it a club for ex-missionaries, even though they may bring some important things to the table. You want to look for a group of people who collectively are strong in some of these areas. I suggest having a group of people who are strong at applying the Bible to real life situations. There's some skill, not necessarily all of them, but collectively as a group. Those who have skills in communication, not least having maybe one person who can particularly communicate something of the vision more widely in your church and mobilize them. People who are strong in encouragement, in risk-taking, who understand what biblical risk-taking looks like. You need that if you're going to think about a global mission, and especially as increasingly the parts of the world that are not reached are difficult and dangerous. Implementation, discernment and exhortation in God's leading, and pastoral care. There are some of the gifts and skills that would be needed. And I'd add as well, have an elder in there if you can, so that it's anchored back into the leadership of the overall church. And once you have a team, give them a brief and let them loose. Give them permission to shake the church up a bit, disturb a few people. Give them some airtime regularly. Get some momentum going. And remember that they are not there to do the mission on behalf of the church. They are actually there to mobilize the church. They are there to disciple the church in this area. Okay, that's just a bit on a strategy. Lots more could be said. We're going to have some time now for Q&A. And we have a mic. Oh, it's here. We have a mic that we can pass around. Celia, thank you, is going to help us with that. If you have a question you'd like to ask regarding any of the things we've said or some of the things we haven't said.
Is this on?
Oh, yes.
It is. Please do ask us.
Thank you both. This is maybe going slightly to the specifics, but I know that I think there are probably others in the room and friends of mine at other churches that have this as well. If you're doing a church plant, you can go, here's two families or two individuals, we're going to support them. If you're coming into a situation, hypothetically, where actually the church is already supporting a number of people, 12, 14, or not so much people, but organizations doing great things. Yeah. But again, it's kind of slightly example one at the beginning. Thoughts on how you might change that sensitively, carefully, boldly?
I think you want to be very kind. It's important, isn't it, to be kind. You want to have, you're talking about having some kind of filter and strategy. You could apply that horribly brutally, couldn't you? And just say, you guys don't fit, and you just cut people off. And we don't want to be those guys. I think you want to honor some of the things that have been established. But I think over time, you might want to have discussions about whether you keep going with all of those and think about how you could condense some of that. It's hard to say because it's so personal, is it? But to have some relationship with some of those people, I think if you do decide, if it seems like the wise thing to do, to stop supporting some particular organizations or people, especially if it's individuals, do give them notice. Give them plenty of notice and maybe do it gradually. Just really try and think carefully and helpfully about that. And sometimes there is a sense, isn't there, in which things are grandfathered in, but then it's what you do new going forward that you start to put through the new filter, if you have such a thing. So that would be one comment.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, we went through this process at Beeston over the years because God began to answer that prayer about new workers. And it was just unsustainable, really, to have the volume of people in the mix. And because we hadn't sent anyone for a while, we ended up with this big list of people we were trying to support, which was really well-intentioned. And one of the things we did, we had to try and describe to the church the difference between different people. We had mission partners, those we'd sent. Mission associates, those who we were supporting sent from elsewhere. And we had mission friends, who were people who had a historic link of some kind, but it was quite small. We want to honor those people, and particularly honor the people in our church family who'd been supporting them for many years. And so one thing we would do is say the mission friends, historically, when they were in town, would feel the pressure. They must come to the midweek meeting and they must stand at front on a Sunday, and no one really knew them anymore. And we had all these new people to support also. And so we'd in the notice to say, oh, but one of our mission friends is in town, and this particular church member is going to have an open house this evening coming up. We'd love to have a warm welcome for anyone who wants to join. They're going to have a meal together if you'd like to hear more about their work. So recognizing their ministry, still honoring it, but also giving much more airtime to those we were sending ourselves.
Yeah, and having conversations with certain ones, it might be that in terms of thinking, well, where are we already involved, that there are certain ones within that range of people who you think, actually, these are the ones that we're going to put more focus on, however you might categorize it, and talk to them, talk to their... One of my colleagues, when he was organizing a mission in his church, one of the things he did when he took over, and there was all kinds of different things, similar sort of situation, he got on the phone to some of the organizations that they had people with, some of whom didn't really want to talk to him. They were like, just leave us alone. They said, no, we want to get involved. And some of that then grew into significant things, so that what looked like a bit of a, oh, I'm not really quite sure what this is, became more significant. There's a discernment and wisdom process, isn't there? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, thank you so much. Sort of following on with what you can inherit in a church. In our situation, it's not the whole big group of variety, but still, how do you get to know existing mission partners well as a pastor in particular? So, for example, we've got two mission families known to the church, but I don't know them. Any advice?
If you can, I'd say go and visit them. I mean, it depends where they are in the situation. That will mean a massive amount to them. I think probably more than we can imagine, to go and sit with them. If that's possible, that would be huge. Go and sit with them and listen. And if that's then, if they are people that you're going to continue to be involved with as a church, you know, when we're talking about when the main leaders own stuff in front of the church, when you've seen there and you've been that, it lives more in you as well, doesn't it? So that sort of just comes out of you when you talk about it. So that would be one thing I would suggest if you can. There's lots of in-between things like Zoom calls of stuff, of course, that we can do now. But or some key people in the church visit.
I agree.
Yes, he agrees. Okay. Yeah.
Could you just say something about funding strategies for mission in church, whether you would recommend investments or a percentage of a budget or a separate fund?
Yeah, again, it's a good, really important question, and every church is so different, isn't it? You've got different historical trends and that kind of thing. Again, just going back to our Nottingham days, we put together a mission policy once people started to be beginning to be sent, so we could be a bit more thoughtful about the process, really. That's really helpful for those who are preparing to be sent. It's really helpful for clarity for the church family as well. And we came and we looked at other policies of other churches. We came with a slightly arbitrary policy. We said we'd fund up to 30% of people's mission budget if they were being sent by the church corporately. I've heard of one church out there that says they'll do 100%, which is really amazing. I guess the reality is a challenge when you hit a certain number. Churches seem out there to, from what we observe, 10 to 40% they maybe have as their number. What I'd say is don't get too precious about getting too, you can put yourself in a bit of a corner with these things sometimes. After a while, what we did at Beeston, because we were sending more and more people, and because we were a church with quite a transient congregation, half the congregation would move on every 5 years, because we were quite near a university and teaching hospitals, that kind of thing. We said to people, including ourselves when we were being sent, before we decide how much we'll give corporately, just start your support raising. Share it in the life of the church. And so for us, in the end, we weren't supported corporately at all, which was the right thing, because we didn't need to be, because half of our money was pledged from people within the Beeston church family. What was good about that was, and others who followed, was when that half of that congregation moved on, well, they, in a sense, without being too blunt, they took their support with them. And they remain connected to us financially as well as prayerfully. As a few thoughts, lots more we could say. Happy to chat afterwards in more detail.
And then from a raising the funds point of view as well, you could, some churches will say, we want to try to work towards 10%, or I've heard of some even saying 20%, but towards a percentage of your budget towards it. But another way also to approach that, that we've seen, was one of the churches in our network has made a kind of an annual Mission Sunday, Global Sunday, a really big event, not just the church service on that theme, but they'll really go to town, make it very, you know, hugely profile it, bring mission partners back if they're able to be part of that, have a big lunch and all those kind of things afterwards, and produce this kind of document really that says, here's what we want to do in the next year. The mission team would put all of this together and have a massive fundraise and pledge as much as they can in that, that day and the following weeks as well. So that whilst there may be money within the budget that's put towards it, they'll try and supplement it with something like that. So that's on the finance side from a raising it point of view.
Thank you. So how do you build this system of Mission Central in the new church plant?
Well, it's a good question. It's one we're trying to answer right now, I think. That's the reality. One of the things we did was first as elders to talk about the issue. And then when we talked about the issue, we put together a very simple mission policy. So our mission policy in Beeston is like about 25 pages long, and it talks about the minutiae because we've had to answer questions about all sorts of practicalities. We've got two pages. Happy to share it with anyone if you want to look at it. You can improve it for us. But we've got a two-pager, which in a sense sets our stall out as a church to say, what do we think mission is? What kind of things are we willing to send people to? What are our thoughts about short-term mission? Particularly, we say something about our prayer that we would send from our church. We then shared that with the membership, and we've explained why it is we're approaching mission in this way. We've explained we're supporting these two existing families being sent from elsewhere. And then we're trying to come back to that at different occasions as a church. A very more recent leadership meeting, elders meeting, we were talking about some of the wider things. Like, I think we've been quite focused on thinking about sending from within. That prayer's not yet been answered. And so we're starting to talk a bit about church-to-church partnerships, thinking about our young people, how can we be more intentional about sending them to short-term things rather than waiting for them to come to us. So there are a few of the things we've been beginning to do. Yeah.
I would say as well that if you're a new church plant, there can be something where you have a real affinity with other places that are starting new churches. So although you might feel quite vulnerable and weak in some ways, if part of your mission involvement was getting alongside and seeking to partner with and encourage a church that was starting in a new place itself, often the people in your church will get what it's like for them. And there can be this real sense of partnership so that if people remember what it was like to start something from nothing in that locality, they can maybe catch the vision of what is also being done to start something from nothing in this other locality. And to the extent that a smaller, newer church may feel like, well, we can't really, you know, write the big checks and we haven't got people to send yet and so on. I think that's where one of the things that we sometimes try to encourage is multi-church partnerships, so that it's not just a partnership, say, between this church and that church, but between this church and another church and maybe another church and this church. And there's one particular church. It's not a new church, but it's an old Anglican church, but it's weak in certain respects. It's not a big place that wants to get involved with mission in a particular part of the world. And one of the ways they're going to do that, it looks like, is by partnering with something alongside a bigger, more established church here, so that when this church sends a short-term team, maybe one or two people from this other church might be able to become part of that as well, so that it doesn't feel like, oh, we have to provide the whole caboodle, but actually work alongside an existing partnership and come in as a, I was going to say as a junior partner, but that's not the right language. You know what I mean? Because actually you're equal, but it may be that you contribute different things. Yeah.
Can I just mention these?
They're clapping for us next door.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great. Can I just mention a couple of things? I think our time has gone, hasn't it? But, thank you. Here are details on here. Would love to connect with any of you. There are a few practical ways you might want to follow up. Okay. So Adrian Reynolds has asked if we'd run a follow-up webinar. We've got a very high-tech sign-up system, which involves me writing on the back of my notes, name, church, and email address. I'm going to put this on the table at the front. If you'd like to join a webinar in the next few weeks at some stage, to continue to think about these practical issues, please put your name down. Likewise, if you'd like Anthony or myself or someone from one of our different organizations to sit down with you or a few of you from your church and just talk about this in the specific context of your circumstances, like some sort of consultation or something, we'd be really delighted to do that, okay? We're going to put another sheet out that'll say consultation, very posh. That'll go next to it. And then third thing, we've put together this thing, we don't know what to call it, but Mission MOT. It's basically a list of questions to help you with your leadership team or a mission committee to sit down and take stock, okay, where are we at and where would we like to get to? And that might be a good basis to then think, how do we get from here to here? We'll put a few of those out on the table. Feel free to grab them.